Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. This is Robert Lamb.
And this is Joe McCormick, and it's Monday, the day of the week we read some messages from the mailbag. We got some Halloween-related email, but also some cleanup on some older episodes today, so it'll be a nice assortment.
All right, let's jump in. What have we got? Let's get some Halloween-y stuff out here.
Okay, well, first of all, yeah, this one does concern some Halloween episodes. So you remember in the episodes we did on Elf Shot, there was one remedy for cattle that had been wounded with a fairy dart or an elf arrow, and it involved having a wise woman force feed something called fairy crabs to a cow. We had no idea what fairy crabs were. There is a thing called a fairy crab, but that can't be what the text is talking about because it's on the other side of the world and the name comes from much later. So we were just at a loss. We didn't know what this was referring to. But listener Leanne writes in with some thoughts. Leanne says, I have a hypothesis about fairy crabs. There is a species of small crustacean, Chirocephalus diaphanus, found in the UK in vernal pools, known as the fairy shrimp, for their ability to enter diapause when the pools dry up and seemingly magically reappear much later. Diapause refers to like a dormancy state in the development of an organism. Leanne goes on, I don't know if people would have used the words crab and shrimp interchangeably, but I'd say it's possible. And so, Rob, I attached a couple of pictures I found of Chirocephalus diaphanus. It is a rather magical-looking little critter, and yeah, you can imagine that you might attribute fairy-like powers to these if you see that there's a tide pool or some kind of body of water full of these animals, and then they just seem to disappear. Like, what happened to them? I don't know. And then they reemerge later. Well, maybe they're some of the fairy folk.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like something you might put in a magical potion. It also does make me wonder if there is anything in the bodies of these little creatures that would have any kind of a marked effect on, say, a human if they were to consume them, like something that stood out, even if it wasn't something that really had a medicinal property to it.
Yeah, totally. So I would say interesting guess, Leanne. But Leanne has another idea. She writes, another possibility lies in an organism found in the pools alongside the fairy shrimp, Triops cancriformis, also called tadpole shrimps, and a bunch of other things. My sister had these, sold as sea monkeys, when we were growing up. I couldn't find any reference to them being called fairy crabs online, but they look much more crab-like. I wonder if they may have been known as fairy crabs at some point, given their similarities to the fairy shrimp, their shared habitat, and their crab-like appearance. And Rob, I also found some pictures of Triops cancriformis for you to look at here. They are certainly more crabby. They have a more a crawling kind of anatomy. They look, in a way, kind of like trilobites.
Yeah. These are interesting critters.
They have a sort of a piece of armor on the back, like a big dorsal plate, and then the skittering legs underneath, and then a tail, eyes up on top, various whiskers and doodads pointing out. This looks like a fairy crab to me, but once again, I don't know of any literature from the time period in that place making the link, but totally decent guess.
You know, this makes me wonder too, if we should do an episode on sea monkeys at some point.
Ooh,
so, there are a number of things to talk about with sea monkeys, and they certainly have a cultural footprint, including the 1992 TV series, The Amazing Live Sea Monkeys, in which Howie Mandel plays a sea monkey.
Oh boy. Has there ever been a killer sea monkeys horror movie?
Not that I know of.
That's an idea.
But this, the creature effects in The Amazing Live Sea Monkeys, I remember as a child being slightly horrific. So maybe this counts.
Looking it up right now. Oh, no. No. Oh, it's Mac and Me.
Yeah, it has that kind of look to it. Yeah, they're weird. This is some frightening makeup. Yeah. So look it up for yourselves, everybody. If you look up Howie Mandel Sea Monkey, you'll see this. And perhaps you, like me, you have some conflicted memories of having caught this on like late Saturday mornings as a child.
Imagine a cross between the Coneheads and Mac and Me and the Bullseye. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. All right. This next one comes to us from Ian. And this is a previous listener mail about allegations of inhuman numeracy. Dear Rob and Joe, I just finished your July 25th listener mail. I am quite far behind, obviously. And I had to write in response to the listener who said her cat could count up to at least 7 when dragging scraps of cloth from the basement. Oh, yeah, I remember that now. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of an incident with one of my cats, which strangely enough also involves a basement. My wife and I have 3 cats, and when I feed them, our oldest cat, Zorro, gets fed last, because otherwise he will rush to eat all of his food and then go steal the others' food before they have a chance to finish. I have him trained to where, though he will follow me to the bowls of the other two and watch me dish out the food, he won't actually try to eat it. He will wait for his own. I have always wondered if he could actually count to 3 or if he just knew which location he gets fed at, and a severe storm earlier this year gave me an apparent answer. One day this spring, while I was preparing dinner and waiting for my wife to get home from work, the tornado sirens went off. Luckily, in this instance, no one was hurt and no major damage was done. So I turned off the stove and went to the basement. The cats, who normally like nothing better than to try to sneak into the basin every time I opened the door, wouldn't come anywhere near. As it was close to dinner time, I tried what anyone would. I got out their food and started dishing it out in the basement. Only Zorro came down. The other two stood at the top of the stairs, staring, but would not descend. And as always, he followed me to the first bowl and watched me fill it, then the second, and only started eating when I filled the third. This, despite the fact that there were no other cats present trying to eat the food. The bowls were in completely different locations from normal. I was giving all of them the same food, and I had picked up and put down the bowls in no particular order, so it's unlikely he was somehow identifying the bowl itself. For the life of me, I can't think of any other explanation than that he is able to count ordinal numbers up to at least 3rd, though I am certainly open to having missed something. I do generally consider him to be by far the smartest of our 3 cats, so if any of them could do it, I would expect it to be him, As always, thank you for the wonderful and interesting show, Ian.
That is an interesting story. Though I, there could be another thing going on here, which is that Zorro could be reading cues off of you. It's possible that, Ian, you do something with your body or your face or something to signal, now it is time, this one is yours.
Yeah. Yeah, in my own household, watching the cat and being watched by the cat around mealtime for her, it leads for all sorts of theories. Like, okay, how does she know that it is time? Is she just hungry at this time? Or have I clued her into it by something I'm doing, getting up and moving around? It's always a puzzle with the cats. But yeah, like we've discussed previously, they're smart animals. They're smart as they need to be to do the things they do. And so when they're encountering puzzles like this, they may well be solving them incredibly. They just might not be solving them along the same logical or mathematical lines that the human brain would solve the same problem, and not dependent upon the same sense data either. But I also love this story too, because it sounds like a setup to a horror story. Two of the cats knew not to go into the basement. Only Zorro, the selfish cat, the hungry cat, would come down.
And I like how the best you could do with training for Zorro is that, okay, he's not going to rush in and eat the other cat's food, but he will sit there and menace them while they eat until he gets his. Okay, are you ready for, a very spooky Halloween-themed message about in response to incense?
Ooh, let's do it.
Okay, this one is from Joe, just J-O, no E in this one. Joe writes an email with subject line, "The scent of the supernatural, not fun." Oh, and fair warning, this email contains some rather grisly ghost lore, so be warned. "Dear Robert and Joe, in episode 2 of Incense, you mentioned that the scent of incense was linked to godly encounters. Since Halloween is rapidly approaching, I thought it might interest you to know that in Malaysia and Indonesia, the scent of jasmine and frangipani flowers at night is often linked to the presence of a ghost called the Pontianak in Malay, or the Kuntilanak in Indonesia. The Pontianak is the ghost of a pregnant woman who eviscerates her victims with her long fingernails. She often appears in a white, blood-stained dress with long, dark hair. Some say she died at the hands of a violent man. Some say her baby was a stillborn child. Some say she died in childbirth. Whatever the reason, she lives in banana trees during the day, then comes out at night with vengeance on her mind. The only way to tame a Pontianak is to drive a nail into her nape or the top of her head, after which legend says she will become a beautiful woman and a good wife. Other signs of the Pontianak include the soft wailing of a baby, light feminine laughter, or a bird calling out ki-ki-ki as it flies overhead. In essence, if you smell something floral at night in Southeast Asia, when there aren't any flowers in the vicinity, it is time to get the hell out of Dodge."
Oh, this is fabulous. I wasn't aware of these scent associations with the Pontianak and its Indonesian counterpart. But I had read about this creature before in one of my many creature books here. And also it had come out, where we're always come up because we're always scouting films for Weird House Cinema. And this particular creature is the subject of numerous Malaysian and Indonesian horror films, like going all the way back to the 1950s, I think, and then on up to like recent films. So I haven't actually gone beyond the research phase on this and watched one of these. So if anyone out there has experience with these movies and would like to recommend one to me, do so, because I'm always interested to check out something like this.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Joe goes on. Joe also has some notes about our episodes on fun. She writes, "Digressing, your episodes on the nature of fun made me realize that there isn't a term for fun as a noun in Mandarin. The term used most commonly to refer to having fun, hao wan, is translated as good play. So instead of did you have fun, we ask each other, did you play well? Instead, our words for fun all mean things like interesting, enjoyable, happiness, or joy. Similarly, the most common word for fun in Malay is shock or seronok, which both mean enjoyable. Essentially, our version of was it fun actually means was it enjoyable. I'll definitely keep an eye out for fun words as I learn other languages now. Hope you enjoyed these tidbits. Looking forward to more episodes. Live long and prosper. Joe without an E.
Oh, that's fabulous.
I believe Joe has contacted us in the past with really good emails about Southeast Asian myths and legends. So, please keep it up. Love the emails.
All right. This next one, this one concerns a number of different topics. This is from Andrew. This one has numbers in it. So we're going to go through a few different things here. Andrew writes in and says, "Hello, fellas. I'm a few weeks behind on my podcast, so I'm a little behind the ball here. Thanks again for the entertainment. You all beam into my ear holes. I truly enjoy it." Number one, a thought came about during your discussion of interesting sensors during the incense series. When I was a kid, a relative was stationed in Germany as a member of the United States Army. He would often send interesting gifts to family members around the holidays. One of these was called a smoker, which is apparently common in southern Germany. These are basically wooden figurines stylized in a similar fashion to a nutcracker. Instead of a nightmarish unhinged jaw, there is a gaping round mouth with a tunnel extending through the torso. The top half of the figurine would be removed to reveal a platform where a conical lump of incense would be placed and lit before putting the top back on. The smoke would travel up, and the figure would appear to be smoking. See attached, includes an image of this. Mine was a boat captain in a rain slicker holding a tiny metal pipe. I thought this thing was absolutely the coolest, but we had a cat who was fond of knocking it to the ground. Some cats just want to watch the world burn. You know how it is.
So you had a sensor that was basically the killer from I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I mean, it doesn't look quite like that. It looks more gnomish.
Oh no, I don't think the gnome attached is the one in the rain slicker. I think Andrew's talking about a different one there.
You're imagining this as the killer from that slasher movie.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. All right, number two. I was recently at a wedding where the videographer was utilizing a 35mm digital camera on a monopod equipped with a gimbal system. I was mesmerized throughout the ceremony and barely caught the vows. Fortunately, my wife was in the ceremony, so it's unlikely anyone actually caught me spacing out. I like this tidbit because for a second there, I thought the punchline was going to be that it was his own wedding that he was coming out at. But that's not the case. All right, number three. During a recent Weird House episode, you discussed some poachers going after eagle eggs for an unexplained reason. This would have been the extraterrestrial visitors episode,
yes,
aka pod people.
Yes, because there were poachers in there, what led by the guy who looks like a cross between Leslie Nielsen and Sam the Eagle, and they were like climbing up in trees, stealing eggs out of nests.
So he continues, I was reminded of the 1990 Disney non-musical film, The Rescuers Down Under. Way better than its predecessor, Don't At Me. The villain in the movie, voiced by none other than George C. Scott, is after the eggs of a giant golden eagle. His motivations are somewhat ambiguous in this movie as well. I suppose he can sell them. Moral of the story is poachers gonna poach.
I watched that movie when I was a little kid. I remember it made me think Australia was really cool. And I think it was also part of I don't know if there's a formal term for this, sort of a period of a few years where there was just a lot of Australia-related cinema in the United States.
Yeah, like mainstream exploitation cinema. Yeah, this was the era of Crocodile Dundee and so forth. I remember this film as well. I think I saw it in the theater. And the other thing I remember besides George C. Scott being the villain is that, I guess with both Rescuers movies, Bob Newhart is one of the mice. He's one of the main voices in it,
yeah.
Which always stood out to me because we would always, as a family, we would always watch Bob Newhart shows or whichever one it was where he had the inn and he ran an inn somewhere in New England.
Yeah, with Larry, Daryl, and Daryl.
Yeah, that one.
I remember about this movie that there was I think the poacher had a pet. I don't know how you actually say the name of this lizard. It's like Goanna or Goanna, and it was named Joanna.
Oh, yeah, that does ring a bell. Yeah, I haven't seen it since then, but I remembered it as being fun. I kind of put it in the same mental filing cabinet as The Great Mouse Detective, which, of course, had Vincent Price in it.
Ooh, yeah. as Ratigan.
All right, number four. Finally, I previously wrote in about Sammy Terry, and you used the story generator to create a tale of spooky savings. Oh, yeah. This genuinely had me breaking into hysterical laughter while driving home from work. Thank you for that. Now that we are fully into October, Sammy keeps popping up in my day-to-day. Maybe it's just a little Bader Meinhof, see attached.
And then we get some screenshots of, what is this, like Reddit and Instagram and stuff of Sammy like Terry popping up everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's irresistible. Many frights to you this October, Andrew.
I just remembered, because of this email, the spooky savings story. Do you remember that? I think we ran a line from a Sammy Terry commercial through the AI story generator, and it wrote a story about how a bank was offering new special deals that gave people really tremendous savings, but everyone who took the deals ended up stranded in hell.
Oh, goodness. Yes. This was a good one. Two things I want to mention real quick about the story generator. First of all, I'll share the link again for anyone interested. It's story-machines.net, and it was released as part of this book that came out. I talked to the author in a previous episode of the show. One of the authors, Mike Sharples. So it's a really great book. I really recommend it for anyone who wants a deeper understanding of what's going on with this technology. And hey, as we're getting into not only Halloween, but the holidays, that seems like a good excuse for folks out there to generate some holiday and Halloween stories to send in to us that relate to topics we've discussed. But the other thing I wanted to bring up is, not naming names or anything here, but this was in the last few weeks was the first time I heard this was probably a second, third, or fourth hand account, but a tale coming home from my child's school about somebody using AI generated text on an assignment. So that was one of those moments where I'm like, oh man, I'm feeling future shock from this, because this thing that is in a topic we discussed, it's already here. It's already out there in the world that my child occupies, you know?
I was reading something just the other day about students using AI to generate text for writing assignments. And on one hand, I thought, wait a minute, these things are still not that good yet. How could they really, surely you would catch that. But then the other half of me went, you're forgetting how bad some student writing is.
True. Yeah. But the interesting thing about it too, and this is something I talked about with Mike Sharples, is that on one hand, yes, there's always this tremendous potential to exploit this kind of technology. But part of his background is in education, and he pointed out that this technology is also potentially great for teaching, instructing children on how to write. So it's not like it has no place in schools. It's just like, how do you responsibly use the technology and get students to use the technology responsibly?
Yeah, I totally get that. And as somebody who has taught writing before, I think I can say I see benefits in having alternative approaches to teaching writing, and some of those approaches being more formulaic or algorithmic, not always treating writing like some kind of magic that just emerges from your brain.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, I'm going to do a message from Dimitri on our episodes on fun. Dimitri says, hi, Joe and Rob. Thanks for a great and engaging podcast you do every time. I'm a longtime listener. I have recently finished all three parts of the Nature of Fun episodes and have a lot of thoughts. First, as one with Russian as a mother tongue and living in Israel for years, I constantly use Russian, Hebrew, and English, often interchangeably, sometimes complementary. My approach to translation is to feel the word by using it in some common sentences in different languages. So, in Russian, the word used similarly to noun usage of fun is Udovolstvi, which is also pleasure, not a very close relative. In Hebrew, to say I did it for fun or it was fun, we use the word kif, which I don't even know how to translate directly. So my opinion here is that the perception of fun might be also language dependent. Yeah, I think we concluded that is true to a large extent in those episodes. Dimitri goes on, speakers of different languages can mean different things by the term fun itself, since it might differ from one language to another. Maybe that's a reason why it's hard to explore fun in psychology. The concept itself is ambiguous. Second, I wanted to talk about having fun in sports. I'm an amateur runner, and yes, runners love talking about running. Amateur runner who runs for fun and competitively. For me, there are several very different funs in running. Let's say when I run alone on the trails, the fun is being submerged in nature, its sounds, and changing view. Also, the feeling of the body working as a well-oiled machine is kind of fun. However, when I run with friends, it's totally different fun. The social aspect, the feeling of togetherness, the talking. And when I run with my son, he's 18, not a kid anymore, and he often accompanies me, it's a third kind of fun. It's like a bonding trip with a bit of competing and fooling around. Yet, I'm still the responsible adult. So, sport can be fun even in the process of doing it. Oh, and running on a treadmill is not fun. Too boring and repetitive. Lastly, about swimming, I also swim laps. And Rob, I think this is responding to your comments about whether or not swimming is fun. Mm-hmm. Dimitri says, if you want to make it more fun, instead of just swimming laps, try varying the speeds. Full speed, 25 meters, followed by easy laps, or add various technique exercises. It's less repetitive, so more fun, and improves swimming overall. Here I follow the advice of my son's swimming coaches. He swam competitively for many years. Sorry for the long message, Dimitri. Oh, Dimitri, no need to be sorry.
Yeah, these are some good points, especially the changing of the intensity. I'll have to try that. I don't think I've really tried that. I did have some good results, like mixing things up to where instead of saying, all right, I'm going to do X number of laps, to break it up into segments. Mm-hmm. So like now I break my laps up into segments of five. And sometimes my mind will just kind of wander, but other times I find it a good exercise to be like, okay, this is lap number one, and I definitely don't want to forget what number I'm on. So for this entire lap, I'm only going to think about the movie Alien. And then for lap number two, I'm only going to think about aliens. For lap number three, go into Alien 3.
Oh, no, but lap four, oh, no.
There's plenty to think about with the fourth Alien movie. Oh. But it, you know, I can do it with various film franchises, various series. It's like mm-hmm. a kind of a good way to, because for me, the big thing is you get up into the higher numbers, even if it's not that high, if you're only like on four or five, you can easily let your mind wander and forget which lap you were on. And I don't have an abacus or anything or beads that I'm using to keep track of them. So if I have forgotten where I am, then the only logical solution is to say, okay, I think I'm on three, so I'll back it up one just to make sure. So now I'm on two. And then I'm kind of punishing myself for forgetting what lap I'm on. But I would rather not do that. I'd rather just swim the number of laps I set out to swim. And sometimes a film franchise can help with that.
It's a great way to assess one's fitness achievements. So you're like, today I finally made it all the way to the Hellraiser where evil goes online.
Oh, I don't use the Hellraiser films, but I have done fun. Yeah. Things that have at least five, installments are pretty good for this.
I think that one's like seven or eight, by the way.
Yeah. And then I would just get confused later on, 'cause I don't have a clean enough memory about the later Hellraiser movies. I'd be like, all right, one, two, three, four, and then the rest. So. All right. Well, hey, speaking of horror and film franchises, the next one comes to us from Jim. I'm not sure which Jim out of the league of Jims out there, but
Jim. But I should say Jim specifies Jim, parentheses, not from New Jersey.
Okay. All right. Non-New Jersey Jim. But not the non-New Jersey Jim, because there's more than one Jim that's not from New Jersey. Anyway, this Jim says, hey, guys, I love the Artifact episode about Freddy's Claw. It reminded me of the end of the movie Enter the Dragon, starring Bruce Lee. The head bad guy, Han, had a fake left hand that he could attach different weapons on. These include a bear or animal claw and one that had a couple of blades or steak knives in a row. Of course, Bruce wins in the end. The other interesting connection between these two movies is a man that acted in both, John Saxon. In Nightmare, he played a police lieutenant who was father of one of the teenagers and at that time got top billing for the film. In Enter the Dragon, he played a buffed martial artist. Looking forward to Halloween fun this October, Jim, not from New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. And when I first saw these two movies in college, I think they were the only two movies I knew John Saxon from. I saw them almost nearly back to back, I imagine, like freshman year. Because that year I was getting really into horror, but I also had a big Bruce Lee phase. So yeah, like 18-year-old me had intense John Saxon awareness.
Yeah, I mean, these are two big and iconic films that he had roles in. And then, of course, his filmography is really, really deep on top of that. But yeah, Enter the Dragon, some very memorable fight scenes with that bad guy with the different attachments that go on his hand. They ultimately don't aid him too much. He's still defeated by Bruce Lee, as I think everybody is defeated by Bruce Lee in that movie.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought about that so much when I was putting together that that Artifact episode. I was like thinking about Freddy's Claw and asking the question, what do we have in the real world of weaponry that matches up with it at all. And basically the bottom line is you don't have weapons like that, because weapons like that would probably break your fingers if you tried to use them. They only work if you're a dream master, supernatural horror baddie, torpedoing your arm through people's torsos in a nightmare. So I'm unsure about this claw weapon in Enter the Dragon. I'd have to review the footage to even guess at how believable this is. I guess a lot of it would have to do with like how it's mounted and how it's supported. Is it supported more on the wrist? Is it supported at the stump? I mean, there are a lot of ways that it would be a terrible idea, but there may be some ways that you could actually have it well supported on the wrist, I guess.
I can shed no light on the knife hand or the claw, but one fact I do remember about John Saxon in Enter the Dragon is I think in the original version of the script, his character was supposed to get killed with that claw, but Saxon didn't want his character to die, so he said, I'll sign on if you rewrite it so that Jim Kelly's character gets killed instead of mine. And that's a bummer. John Saxon should have died.
I mean, it's not like they ended up doing anything else with that character, did they? Was that his thinking? Like, let's do the franchise?
Oh, like he thought he would get his own Kung Fu series afterwards?
I don't know. Yeah, it's that's an interesting detail. I'm going to have to ponder that one.
I mean, as much as I love John Saxon, my memory is that he is by far the least cool of the three heroes of that movie. I mean, you got to love Bruce and Jim Kelly more, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it does remind me a little bit of the details that we discussed regarding Cannibal Apocalypse, where he was like, I don't want to do that scene where I eat human flesh, you know, yeah. Let's skip that part. So I don't know. Maybe he had an aversion to just the gore of it. It's like, I don't want that blood on me.
John Saxon, did we catch you trying to protect your dignity while acting? Come on, it's not about you. You're playing a character.
I'm sure he had his reasons.
Yeah. Okay. Are you ready to finish off with a couple of short messages about Weird House Cinema?
Let's do it.
All right, this one comes from Pat. Pat says, Joe, Rob, I'm sure you get a lot of recommendations for Weird House. May I add mine? Watched again today The Black Cat from 1934. First and best pairing of Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff. The film is dense, impressionistic, satanic, mysterious. There's a torture scene, necrophilia, and much more. One of the earliest film scores. As an aside, many Lugosi detractors say he didn't get roles because of his thick accent. The accent works better for him in this film than in Dracula. Should you pass this by, I know I will get great entertainment weekly. Thanks ever so much, Pat. Well, Pat, yeah, we'll definitely consider that. We'll put it on the list and see what we think. This is a movie I have wanted to watch for a long time, and I've just never gotten around to until now. But one of my good friends, I remember years ago, was telling me you've got to watch The Black Cat.
Yeah. This is a film I also haven't seen, but I know it's been personally recommended to me. And I've definitely talked to people who hold it up as a very fine horror film, especially of the genre of the time period, but one that just stands out genre-wide as well. All right, this one comes to us from Tom. The subject is Phantasm, death metal. Hello, Robert and Joe. Thank you for the almost frame-by-frame analysis of the movie Phantasm. This film was foundational for my little 8-year-old brain. I'm glad you pointed out the heavy lifting that the music is doing to create that dreamlike atmosphere throughout the film.
You know, I'm all for indulging a child's natural love of monsters. I feel like 8 is a little young for Phantasm.
we say that now, but the 90s and 80s, they were a different time. I don't know when I first saw clips of Phantasm. I don't think it was 8, but at any rate. Tom continues, knowing that Joe is something of a metalhead, I was hoping you'd bring up the Swedish death metal band Entombed and the titular song on their debut album, Left Hand Path. The outro dirge of that song is straight up Phantasm main theme with HM2 pedals turned all the way up. When I first heard that, it blew my then 18-year-old brain. Thanks for the show. It has survived many pod purges and is one of my favorites. Tom.
Oh, well, thanks for the note, Tom. You're right. I do enjoy some metal albums, though I don't really know any Scandinavian metal, so I don't know this band at all. But I did look up the song, and I got to the part where they played the Phantasm theme, and it was pretty wicked.
Cool. Yeah, I'm not really familiar with them either, but I'll have to check out this track. So at any rate, we always enjoy musical recommendations from our listeners, especially when they converge with the Weird Al Cinema topics. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to go ahead and close this one out, but we'd love to hear from you. Keep the listener mails rolling in. You know where to send them. We'll throw out that email in just a second. But just as a reminder, our listener mail episodes run every Monday. Core episodes of Stuff to Blow Your Mind on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On Wednesdays, you get a short form artifact or monster fact. And on Fridays, we do Weird House Cinema. That's our time to set aside most serious concerns and just talk about a strange film.
Huge thanks, as always, to our excellent audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. If you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.